You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 184. For joining us on the podcast, happy Thursday. Happy almost 4th of July. It is a very American thing to be talking baseball with you, Steve. So going to be great as always. We got a fun show ahead, guys. And jumping the gun about a week because it's not quite All-Star break. But from a games volume standpoint, we are pretty much at the halfway mark, just past it. So we're going to be looking at our favorite first half stories from a fantasy standpoint. Love this rundown, Steve. We're talking about a lot of guys, a lot of different topics. Can't wait to get into it. It's going to be a looser show, and it's a fun way to kind of pause and look up beyond your rosters and see what everybody is doing out there and kind of put it in context with what they've done their whole career, where they were drafted this year, where they might be drafted next year, and kind of play the too easy proration game of, like, if you just doubled their stats, how good would this season be for some of these guys? So very pumped. Good to be talking as always. How's it going out there?
Yeah, it's good. Cannot believe how quickly the year is is going by. Already July, more than halfway done. Yeah, we're like, most teams are closer to like, what, 90-ish games, maybe a little bit less, 85 or so.
Yeah, I think it's like 83, 84.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, the actual All-Star team was announced today. Maybe next week we'll do like our fantasy All-Star team. So, you know, there's a lot of halfway content that we could cycle through here. So I think this is a fun chance to talk about maybe some storylines that we wouldn't normally get to hit on this show, right? We're usually looking for one of the radar hitters, like, looking for
Miguel Vargas.
Yeah, talking about some things that right, may not be grabbing headlines, right? So now we actually get a chance to talk about some of the things that are more of note, which is fun. And I'm excited to get into it. It's been a very, very interesting year. A lot going on, so I'm excited to get into it.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. And for those of you joining on the live stream, welcome. In general, guys, if you find yourself kind of taking a pause at this midway mark, we'd appreciate it. You go out and give us a rating and review. It goes a long way for us. But yeah, Steve, to kind of get into the rundown, tried to categorize this through some pillars, if you will, with guys that have come out of nowhere, guys who are finally doing it. In terms of we've been waiting on it for a long time for most of those cases, and it's finally happening, or it seems to be. And then some bounce backs, which kind of just manifested as I was looking through top storylines. It was like, this is kind of a season of some notable bounce backs, if you want to call them that. We'll get into it all, but we got to start at the top, Steve, with the home run race, which usually you kind of use those words near the end of the season, but now that Shohei Ohtani joins Aaron Judge and checks notes Cal Raleigh in the 30 homer club, it just is an early storyline that, as much as there's been the drag on the ball and everything that you brought up in recent episodes, we have three guys more or less on pace for 60 homers, which has never happened in a single season. I looked, AI deceived me and said it happened in 1998, but Maguire and Sosa hit over 60.
Yeah,
it
was Griffey tailed off, yeah.
And Luis Gonzalez hit 57. They lumped him in there, and I was like, yeah, I don't know about that. We need a fact checker on that, but to my knowledge, it has never been done. So, yeah, these guys, Steve, I mean, you got Judge, you got Ohtani, but then Kyle Raleigh, which we briefly mentioned last episode, but we got to get into it a little bit more. He's sitting at 33 bombs with 71 RBIs. Like, if you just, again, like, well, you'll get blue in the face by the end of the show how often I'm going to be doubling these numbers. But is he seriously on pace for 65 homers and 130-plus RBIs? That is nuts from Cal Raleigh. And I pose the question, what's crazier, the home run total at this point in the season or the fact that he's hitting 272? Because I also did not have that on my bingo card. So I want to hear you talk about Raleigh a little bit, and then we can throw in stuff on Ohtani and Judge. Those guys are pretty good, too.
I don't think that's the craziest stat in his stat line, either of those.
Oh, what do we got? 33 homers
or the 272 average. 9 stolen bases?
Oh, my gosh. You're right. You're right. This guy's on pace for a 60-20 season, actually. Yeah. Book it now.
Yeah. And I don't know. Maybe I'm... I should be enjoying this more. Raleigh now has 330 home run seasons in a row. Has kept that strikeout rate like manageable even in the years past, right? It's been at 28%, like the 35 or 33% or something that you see from a high strikeout, high power hitter. And there's been improvements across the board basically every single year as far as hard hit, barrel. You see it manifesting in the batting average. You know, I don't expect that going forward. I don't think he'll carry a 277 BABIP, although that's not even that high. I mean, but also, you know, home runs don't count for BABIP, so that could be deflating that a little bit. But I don't know, maybe it's just because I don't typically draft catchers early, and you know, I have a share of Kyle Raleigh, but it's kind of just like whichever catcher falls to me at the time.
Right.
That I'm not truly, I don't want to say I'm not appreciative of it, but it hasn't been something. It's more just been like what is going on? Like, this is insane that this is happening.
So you're like not necessarily buying in that, like, we're going to see a Mike Piazza, like, top, even first round. I mean, he's ranked number four overall in my home league, and that's like, one that docks for strikeouts.
In two catcher leagues, like he may be more valuable than Judge. Because he has Judge type numbers, maybe less little batting average at the catcher position. Right? Like it's absolutely crazy. Like It's hard to explain, maybe that's sort of why I don't want to say I'm brushing it off, but like, it's like, what is going on? Like, how is this good? And maybe he is. There's a lot of swing and miss in the profile, and
even that's gotten a little better though. 25% it's gotten a little better. Not Zunino,
And sure, the XBA is at 250, but like, even if he was at 250, like, this is crazy. Like, this is crazy what's going on. Like, I don't know. He's had he hasn't had an OPS that started with an 8, let alone the 10, in his career before this. So part of me wants to regress back to what he's been in the past. And the projections are calling for that. Like, rest of the season, it's like, 850 OPS. But there's still 18 homers, so they're projecting for him to get to 50, right? Uh-huh. And I think he will. I just don't know. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I would take Kyle Raleigh in the beginning of the second round next year. I just can't do it.
Yeah, it's a leap of faith. I mean, if you want to get into the numbers a little bit, like, his pull air rate is markedly higher than it's ever been. And if you're looking at like year over year changes, the biggest thing that I can see is that, because he's always crushed sliders, he struggled with curveballs. This year, obviously he's crushing every pitch type, but curveball has gone up big time. Fastball is the pitch group that's been maybe the biggest jump. That a slug last year of 441, 705 slug against fastballs this year. So kind of curious if like the bat speed, like knowing that the fastball, so the bat speed went from 74.5 up like a half a tick, so not nothing, but just age 28 is the other thing. I mean, that's a little bit more reason to be excited that like this could be who he is. I mean, not this level, but more than the past couple of years. Like, he's entering that power peak. It's not like he's like doing this at, on the wrong side of 30, like a handful of names we'll talk about throughout the rest of the show. And the fact that he's doing it in Seattle, which is not traditionally a great hitter's park, it doesn't matter for like some of these are no doubters in all caps. So yeah, you gotta tip a hat to Kyle Raleigh, and if you've drafted him, you've got to be in good shape in your leagues.
Yeah,
man.
Your team is really good if you have Kyle Raleigh. Yeah, yep. There's really no way about it.
unless you're listening, TJ. And in that case, I'm sorry to twist the knife a little bit. Okay, I had to laugh at your comment on the rundown, Steve. Are Judge and Otani boring? And so talk to me about that. Like at this point, like you just chalk it up and say like, oh, Judge is going to Judge, Otani's going to Otani, but they're having tremendous seasons in their own right, of course.
Yeah, I mean, as we record this, Judge just hit a 2-run homer to tie a game at the Yankees ground 8-0 in. And like, I don't think people bat an eye. Like it's become sort of like what Mike Trout was like, you know, in the mid 2010s, seemingly, right?
I mean, this is insane. A 361 like, batting average right now for Judge. I didn't even realize it was that high. That's nuts.
Yeah, like Otani, like went like, you know, a week and a half without a homer, and it was like, what's going on? And and now he hit like 2 in 2 days and has 30 again. And is in the lead, in, you know, right there for the lead, right? Mm-hmm. It's like they should win MVP, and I could see Raleigh winning it because he's a catcher and because Judge has so many. I don't know if there's a clear case for anyone in the NL that would take Otani. I mean, maybe Tucker. PCA, yeah, or Tucker, but they're not close enough. Like, no. At least Raleigh, like, yeah, has, you know, an OPS that's somewhat close to Judge.
Yeah.
He's still 40 points behind him in WRC plus. It's crazy. But like nothing they do is surprising anymore in a good way, but it feels like there's Judge and Otani fatigue. Like, I don't know, maybe when Otani comes back and starts pitching full games again, I know they're slowly building him up and has a game where he strikes out 10 and hits 2 homers or something like that, you know, then it could be like, oh yeah, this guy is also a pitcher. But it's like, what else can these guys do? And it's almost become expected when this should not be. What they're doing is not normal. It's just super, super impressive.
It's a marvel. Yeah, they are going to be the outright 1 and 2 next year. And Judge, no spring hen for kind of being the late bloomer, relatively speaking. Like, you know, he's 33 now. Otani's age 30. Like, that's you got to start looking at tiebreakers with these two. But that said, I think Judge has shaken the stigma of like health concerns. Knock on wood. But the batting average at like the 361 with basically a 315 XBA beneath it. And then Otani, it's just a slight, you know what I mean? He's at a 287, so he's almost losing 70 points to Judge on batting average right now. I know that in actuality, the gap isn't that big, but yeah, I think it might be like a Judge 1-1 next year if he keeps this up. How could it not? Right.
Yeah, I could see a very good argument for that. All right, these three guys have 30 home runs before the All-Star break. 2019 was the last time that happened. Do you know the three players who had 30 home runs before the 2019 All-Star break?
Oh man, Trout.
Trout was fourth. He had 28. He was not one with 30. He was close.
Acuna.
Acuna, no, I think that was Acuna's second year. He had 21 at the All-Star break.
Give me a hint. Give me like a position or something.
All right, so it's guys that were drafted close to each other. They won MVPs in back-to-back years, I think.
Bellinger had a
Bellinger,
huge 2019.
Yeah, Bellinger had 30. And the other one's peak year was around that the time of Bellinger's peak years as well. And still having a great year this year, but
Springer?
It's peak. No.
I need another hint or something.
And both in the NL. So all three were in the NL.
And he was drafted near Bellinger?
Yeah, these guys were hand in hand for a few years as they hit their prime.
I'm blanking.
NL Central.
Oh, is it a Cub? Chris Bryant?
No.
NL Central. Yelich?
Yeah, there you go. Yelich got 31 of the 2019 All-Star break.
Okay.
Then the last one is a first baseman, also NL. Nicknamed after a bear that lives in the cold.
Oh, Pete Alonso. Gosh.
There you go.
That took too many.
That's all right. Yelich, Bellinger, and Alonso had 30 home runs at the 2019 All-Star break.
Okay. And I'd be curious. So where do you think, all three of these guys break 55?
It's crazy, right? Because if you look at 2019, and that was a rabbit ball. Alonso finished with 53, Yelich 44, and Bellinger finished with 47. So only one broke 50.
Wow. This feels different, though.
This feels different.
And Raleigh?
Yeah. Otani and Judge could hit 20 in, you know, seemingly 5 weeks, right?
Yeah.
6 weeks.
I love it. Well, so we got to keep it moving just because we got so many other ones to talk about. But great storyline to keep an eye on the rest of the way. Steve, you mentioned PCA and just the run that the Cubs have been on. I hate to say it, has been one of the stories. Like, you look at some of the top performers, and even like, say, a Suzuki. We'll talk about Tucker, but Pete Crow Armstrong has been probably the quote unquote out of nowhere guy. Now, granted, he was probably going in like the 10th round in a lot of leagues in draft season, but I don't think anybody expected him to be putting in like a top 15 type of performance. 267 batting average is maybe the only thing that's, you know, par or subpar. 838 OPS, 21 homers, 26 steals. And then I can't get over the 60 runs, 63 RBI. Like, that part is what makes me think, like, is this kind of prime Charlie Blackmon, where it's power speed in spades, and then when you get to the counting stats, it's kind of that, like, that year Bo Bichette had or Trey Turner had, where you're like, oh, they're just going to, like, cruise to 120 runs. So, yeah, PCA at age 23 is probably one that's going to be going late. First round, early second round, probably more second round. I feel like the first round's so jam packed, but thoughts on what we're seeing here, and do you buy this level of breakout? Because I feel like he's not as bright red on all of his underlying sliders and everything, but you have to acknowledge that this is like an all-star breakout.
Yeah, this is a great reason why you shouldn't just draft based on the sliders, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of holes to poke in even what was a really good second half for Pete Crow Armstrong last year, and, you know, an intriguing power speed floor, right? He doesn't hit the ball that hard. There's a lot of swing and miss in the game. He didn't barrel the ball much last year. This year, a lot of those things are still true. Yeah, he's hitting the ball harder. He's barreling more and at a really good level that makes you sort of believe in, at least, you know, maybe not the 40 homer pace that he's on, but a guy that can get to the upper 20s, lower 30s consistently. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he is just 23 years old. I would think that he's, you know, even if his season ended today, he's a lock for the second round, especially with how bad some of the second round picks have been. That round was like a landmine. If you go through the list, I did see a tweet recently just talking about all the names in the second round that have been, there's basically been like Crochet and like two or three others
Trey Turner.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the rest have been hurt, up and down, or disappointing. Mm-hmm. So there's room to get into that area, right? And I definitely think he will. I'm sort of been waiting for the other shoe to drop, just because he's been on fire for so long.
Same.
I do think that there may be stretches like last year to start. But I don't know. Maybe he'll continue to prove me wrong and just go on and have this trajectory, right, of being this power speed threat that is what you want from most first rounders, right? Mm-hmm. The production at least is there. Whether you can project that going forward is the question. But it's absolutely incredible what Pete Armstrong's been doing so far this year.
Yeah. I think tangibly like when you see the hard hit rate is low, he has like an elite pull air rate. So that's always kind of the first, you know, double check thing where it's like, oh, are they getting the most? And if you look at his spray chart on his home runs, like a lot of them are that hard pull to the first base foul pole. And
With pull air, and this is similar with Riley too, like when guys are pulling the ball hard in the air, I wonder if that's more of a descriptive stat than it is predictive. And by that, I mean, and similar to how, like, you know, with the new metrics on Savant, like the mm-hmm. squared up percentage for the swing tracking, right? Not the squared up angle percentage, right? The swing tracking, it's like, okay, guys are squaring up the ball, their timing's on, they're getting the most out of their barrels, right? Like they're doing things well, and like the results are there. Of course, Raleigh and Peaker Armstrong are pulling the most fly balls because they're hitting a ton of homers and like getting the most out of their barrels, and like they're clearly in the zone, so their timing is right when they're hitting the ball as hard as they can. Like, I'm wondering if this is just sort of like, yeah, when guys are on heaters, they're pulling the ball in the air, they're squaring the ball up, they're hitting it at the ideal, it's ideal attack angle. Is what I was thinking of is in the swing metrics.
It's fair. I mean, so it's fair, but there's
not. I'm not poo pooing it, but it's, I mean, just like, okay, these guys are going well.
There's enough other things though, like his ground ball rate has dropped from 42% last year to 31% this year, and I feel like where you hear hitters talk about like how he's been trying to pull the ball more. Mm-hmm. I know what you're saying, that the pull air will be if you're barreling it, and hit. So I think that maybe it's a good call that. To even just look at their pull percentage in general, which is only up 4% versus his pull air, which is up like 8%. Like there's probably a little bit of both that are true, that it's a response to him being red hot, but also when the fly ball rate is up, when the pull rate is up, like good things will happen if you have a 13% barrel rate. So I think we're seeing that, but I think you're probably spot on that. Like what we can expect going forward is not a 20-50 guy. Or, I'm sorry, a 40-50 guy, but high 20s is at least what I will be kind of pegging him for in drafts next year, just because it's kind of an unconventional profile. We've seen this type be inconsistent year over year with the pop, you know what I mean? Like a, I don't know, Semien or some of those, but I think it is real enough to where second round isn't unfair, right?
Mm-hmm.
Quick note, another coming out of nowhere one. Had to throw a shout to Jacob Wilson. I know it's not nearly as exciting, but the fact that this dude has a .339 batting average, 9 homers, 5 steals, is enough to kind of take him beyond that Luis Arraez range. And some decent counting stats. He'll be lucky to hit 100 in either runs or RBIs. And I know he's got a little hamstring thing right now, but wanted to shout out Jacob Wilson. And then if you want to add another one on there, Steve, before we jump.
Yeah, I think James Wood is worth out of all these guys. Yeah. I believe even like Raleigh, like I believe in Wood the most.
I got to eat crow maybe on that one, too, because remember, yeah. I was like Langford and Wood. I just don't know that I'm that in. And now Wood is just looking like a legit fantasy stud.
Yeah. And maybe I'm a sucker for, you know, the bat speed and hard hit data and barrel and, you know, but he's a guy that doesn't chase, like, you know, walks well, you know, does have some swing and miss, but again, a K rate that you can live with and a K rate that's been improving, from year to year. Right. Like his first 162 games in the season, I think he just in his career, like, I think he just hit that mark. It's, It's absolutely insane.
31 homers.
31 homers, steals. 26 steals. Yeah, he's got a 934 OPS this year. Like, this looks like the next superstar.
There's probably some market bias going on there, too. Or not market, but just Nationals aren't the most exciting ball club, at least in this neck of the woods. It's like,
yeah, and they should be better than they are. Like, yeah. They have some exciting young hitters. They're pitching,
but this dude is 22 years old, 6'7", and has like some of the best power, bat speed, and he can easily go for 20 plus bags. Like, I think we've been spoiled with the Tatis, Acuna, like some of the true. Even I feel like even O'Neill Cruz had a little bit more like buzz just with some of the, you know, hardest hit ball and Statcast history and stuff. Like, James Wood is, you know, he's built in a lab, and I think him doing this now, does he eclipse? Okay, PCA or James Wood in terms of draft order, if you had to guess next year, because I think that there's going to be similar hype.
For me, I would go Wood. I don't know if that's what the market would be.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's an interesting one. They definitely seem like they're the exciting, like, early second-round guys that could creep up, because who wouldn't want, you know, someone on the ascent in their career? So, yeah, that's a great one to add. Speaking of ad, we're going to take our first break. After this, we're getting to the finally doing it list. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this. Okay, so Steve, just nonstop talking about Cubs over here. Not my favorite segues, but Kyle Tucker is a guy that I have. I feel like we've both been in on Tucker, which hasn't been hard to do. He's been like the metronome 30-30, 275 guy, but I know I had as one of my bold predictions a couple years back that it was the year that Kyle Tucker goes 1-1 overall in terms of fantasy value and puts it all together. And I feel like this is the year where maybe he won't because of Judge and Ohtani, which is like the cheat code, but he is finally putting it all together for what looks like a career year. 290 average. That 290 is the second highest average of his career. 17 homers. He's never beat 30, and so he's on pace for eclipsing that watermark. 20 steals. He has never stolen more than 30 either. So he's 30 homer, 30 steal is the career high, and this year he's on pace for somewhere in the ballpark of like a 34-40, somewhere in that range. And then 61 runs. So he's also on pace to go well over the 100 mark. 52 RBIs as well. So Tucker, it's all happening. I know the Astros had, you know, kind of yanked him around in the batting lineup for several years, but the Cubs, everything seems to be clicking. And yeah, like, Tucker was almost getting boring in that like 6-9 like first round ADP. And if he keeps this up, do we think he moves a step up into that like top 3 or 4? Talk about Tucker and what you're thinking about this one.
I think so. I think it's encouraging because it looked like this was happening last year, and then that freak shin injury that, like,
that's right.
What he was labeled like day to day at first, right? Remember, then missed a few months. Yeah. Like, you know, maybe from the middle of June or late June on last year, which was pretty devastating because he was on pace to at least have the best power season of his career.
Yeah,
the power is a little bit down, but maybe as it gets warmer and the wind continues to blow out in Wrigley, that could change quickly. He was on I want to say like eight of those homers came pretty early in the season for Tucker, maybe even a little more. There was a decent power drought there, but yeah. Tucker's definitely underrated. It's hard for a first rounder to be underrated, hard for a perennial first rounder to be underrated, but he kind of is. He's like the guy that you take in the middle of the draft when you're, you know, disappointed that you didn't get the turn pick or the 1-2 pick in your KDS, right?
Right.
But you probably do pretty well when Kyle Tucker falls to you at pick 6 and 7, right? There's not much not to like about Tucker. I'm glad that with how disappointing it was to have his what seemed to be a career season last year cut short, continue again this year? Because yes, I've always been a fan of Kyle Tucker and think that he is an incredible, incredible baseball player and just an underappreciated fantasy asset, even though he is a first rounder for and has been for years and should be for years to come.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Yeah, and good call on last year because he was on pace for best power. The average is about a wash. I think one of the big benefits with the Cubbies is with Craig Counsell, the running philosophy. They're second in the majors to date on stolen bases as a team. And you see Tucker, you know, surging toward a career high this year because, again, he's never broken beyond 30, and this year it could be 40. Same with PCA, and both those guys, lefty, a lot of pull stuff. So it seems like maybe more reason to think that there's some, like, philosophy stuff going on there. But, yeah, that's Kyle Tucker. Steve, I saw Hunter Brown and what he's been doing, and I thought about a conversation you and I had about that good glob of pitchers around like ADP 90 to 110. And we got to Hunter Brown and I was like, you know what? I don't know that I'll have a ton of shares. And I think you were like, I'm surprised, man. I feel like he's like totally your type of pitcher. And I was like, yeah, I just don't know. And here he is with 118 strikeouts over 99 innings, a 1.73 ERA and a 0.88 whip. We always talk about that pick 100 range as like the Shane McClanahan, you know, Dylan Cease range of like someone will emerge as like a top five, top 10 starting pitcher. And maybe it's just me, but I feel like Hunter Brown is kind of doing it in like a semi-quiet way. Like we haven't talked about him a ton, but these numbers are like Cy Young worthy. So yeah, hats off to you. I feel like you have more shares than I do, and you've been backing him. So talk about how it's been to be on that side of the Hunter Brown story this year.
Hunter Brown is sixth in pitcher WAR this year, behind Skubal, Crochet, Skeens, Webb, and Wheeler. That seems about right. You know, I know we don't necessarily talk about WAR from like a fantasy perspective, and
is that from a volume? Maybe volume is part of
that? Yeah, and volume plays in that, which is maybe why we don't necessarily
because his ratios care that much about it.
But
of those guys,
he also has the least innings of those guys, by like 10 innings, 15 innings. The rest of those guys are at like 110, 115. He's at 98. So that just goes to show you on a per inning basis how good Hunter Brown's been. I just think that like you saw a pitcher with this high pedigree and all the things that we like to do, take his lumps and, you know, learn how to get big league hitters out. And he moved on the mound, added the sinker, did all the things that, you know, there's a bunch of different things. I'm not going to pretend that I'm a pitching coach and know what those are, but as you see those adjustments happen, this is what these guys need to take the next step. And Hunter Brown did that and is continuing to do that.
I was just going to say we should log it to memory because a lot of times we discount the second half breakout, but the whole back half of last year, which I think is what you were talking about preseason. Over 12 starts.
Like he had a 3.49 ERA, 1.27 WHIP, which is like, that's good. But from the first seven starts after, you know, from April on or whatever it was, he was not that pitcher. He was a lot better than a 3.4 ERA, and he's been a lot better than a 3.4 ERA this year with the 1.76 and a 0.89 WHIP. With a 32% strikeout rate. Like, it's basically just continued. His second half is just continued.
Mm-hmm. And good point that it was, I mean, last April, he had an 11.84 ERA. From then on in, it was like mid threes to sub two, like every single month. So, yeah, Hunter Brown just aged 26. I think he's kind of making a case that he is next up when we're going to see a little bit of a changing of the guard with pitching in the not distant future. Like some of the names that are up there are starting to get, you know, some grays on the chin and everything. So I think it's been cool to see Hunter Brown do it. Did I say Hunter Green? Because he's also probably in the next up category. But yeah, keeping it moving on these guys. Again, that he's finally doing it. More of a joke in here that I put Junior Caminero, Steve, because I was getting impatient with him for like one show, five shows ago. And you're like, it's also early. And then he's rattled off a ton. I think it's like, what, 10 homers in the past 5 weeks or something. So now he's on pace for 40 homers, which even if, you know, he ends up at like 35, he was a name that I was on the show saying the most exciting hitter in the top 100 just because of all the buzz and yeah, now he's doing it. And it feels like as someone who rosters him, I get extra pumped when I see it's a Caminero homer, because it's like you're kind of learning the ceiling in real time, which is awesome. And it's also true of Riley Green, who is yours on all preseason, and he is one that we're like, is he mid-20s power? Is he high-20s power? He's also on pace to go high-30s on homers. So I think Caminero and Riley Green have been fun to watch as, again, kind of that next up for premier bats, power bats. So, yeah, I don't know if you want to hit on either one of those guys, but it's been cool watching the youngsters kind of take center stage.
Yeah, I think Green hit two more homers today in the first game, so he's at 21. They're both three-run homers, so Green has been absolutely incredible. As far as OPS overall, he's not far behind the leaders. He is 15th. Right behind your boy Eugenio Suarez.
Oh yeah, there we go. Hey, well, I followed your path. I got him in TGFBI and Raz Slam because I was buying in after you got me sold on the Nick Pollock story of just like how pitchers hate facing Riley Green pretty much with their approach. Yeah. So we're seeing why now, which is awesome.
It's crazy that he has a 29% strikeout rate. It's always been high, but it's you wouldn't have thought that it would go up after he made improvements in swing strike and like chipped away at cutting down the strikeout rate over the year. But hey, you'll absolutely take the trade off.
It might and it might be intentional too. You know,
for sure
what somebody else
for sure
we're gonna talk about made that conscious choice. But yeah, really cool to see Green and Caminero doing it. The other one, Steve, that we haven't talked about a ton, this one fits the category. Joe Adell, finally, is he doing it, or is it a flash in the pan? But 18 homers is a pretty good sample size, and there's some reasons to believe. So the 15.5% barrel rate, 90th percentile, that's the highest barrel rate of his career. It's also the lowest swing and miss rate of his career. He's one that like 24% K rate. It's like that's the point you're making on Riley Green. Like if you held up Joe Adell and Riley Green and said who strikes out more, you know what I mean? Like conventional wisdom, you're like, oh yeah, Joe Adell is like kind of a hacker, but he's cut down to a 24% K rate. And yeah, just even month over month this season, his bat speed, his hard hit rate, both going up. So, yeah, he's obviously on a power binge with 11 homers in the past month. He seems like the type that can have peaks and valleys. But on pace for 35-plus homers and a batting average that's not going to kill you at, like, .243. XBA looks even better. So, yeah, what do we think of Joe Adell, age 26? Like, there's definitely fatigue on this name, and nobody's that excited about the Angels, but this is kind of a little sneaky breakout.
Yeah, this is an awesome story. I mean, there's been so many ups and downs and so much hype and, you know, how many times, like, would have been surprised if the Angels, like, DFA'd him, like, you know.
He gets added and dropped in more, like, conventional leagues than any player. It's like everybody gets a ride type of thing.
And, like, just as a, just not outside of fantasy, like,
right,
dude had a 40% strikeout rate in 2023. Like, you know, had looked like he was putting it together at points last year, and still had 20 homers, and you know, ended up still being at a 91 WRC plus, which was the best of his career. And now it finally looks like it's coming together. And maybe it's not the, you know, the hype of when he was a number one prospect and he'll never reach that peak, but it still looks like there's a good player in here and a very useful fantasy one, especially with the strikeout rate at 24%, with how hard he hits the ball, at a 48% hard hit rate. That's the best of his career. I would imagine the batting average actually is maybe a little low. Maybe he does have a 260 season in there, and that's when a really valuable fantasy season comes up, especially because he can run well and did steal 15 bases last year. So this might be like my favorite, like, you know, or favorite story of the year. Like, it's always fun
for
when,
you.
Like guys that have just been
grinding,
had this hype and are disappointing and they're just trashed, and
it'd be like if Kelenic scrubs, did it next, you know, year or something. You know what I mean? Like Jared Kelenic broke.
Yeah,
like
that would be very similar type of story, right? Like, and this guy has like the best bat speed in the league, so you know the raw tools are always there. So it's cool for someone that I always wanted to believe in come through, and it looks like it finally is, and he's on his way to even though it may not be what we hope for when he was a number one prospect, but he's still on his way to the best year of his career. So good for Joe Adell. I am happy for him.
It's also interesting too that like throughout his entire career, he has kind of struggled from an average standpoint against right-handed hitters. He's a righty, but then he's gotten a lot of pop against right-handed hitters or against right-handed pitching. This year, he has 14 of his 18 homers against righties and a 795 OPS. Last year, he had a 620 OPS against righties. So I think that's another, like, kind of the platoon factor is just something that's interesting, even though he's always done some of his power damage there. He's been, like, a liability, like, under the Mendoza line. And this year, it looks like he's kind of fixing that issue as well. So, yeah, I think Adell is a cool one and maybe one that's flown under the radar more than it should have to date. So that's our list of finally doing it. Kyle Tucker, Hunter Brown, Junior Caminero, Riley Green, Joe Adell. I know some of those finalies are in air quotes there, but fun list of names to talk about regardless. And we're going to get to our bounce backs, but we're going to take our second ad break. We'll be right back after this. All right. So Steve, this is, you know, it's kind of fitting at near the end of the show. We're talking about guys who maybe they're not at the end of their career, but they're in the twilight years a little bit, at least two of the three of these guys. Jacob DeGrom, I originally had him in the finally doing it list, and it had nothing to do with performance, but staying healthy. I joked here that I'm knocking on every wood surface in the house because I've got some DeGrom, but it's just this DeGrom is a walking air quotes thing here because I wanted to say he's looked normal or human, but he also has a 2.13 ERA and a 0.89 whip. it's also his air quote slowest four seam velocity since 2019, but it might be one of the only cases where we see a lower velocity and we're like, yes, like that's huge. So this DeGrom banter and just watching him, and there were moments where you were kind of like, what, you know, is DeGrom just going to be like a middle of the road guy like early on in the season? And he's locked into where I think, you know, in the past seven or eight starts he's given up like one, maybe two runs in every single outing. So yeah, now the fact that he's got under a strikeout per inning, granted it's one strikeout less than inning pitched. And he had that really weird outing where he had like zero strikeouts or one strikeout or whatever it was. But age 37 for DeGrom, which I had to kind of stop and feel old by saying DeGrom is 37 years old. But what a Hall of Fame career he's had. And I love when these wily veteran pitchers, whether it's Wainwright or, you know, whoever, like the Klubers of old, like Chris Sale, even a little bit, like when they have a prove it type of season when they just come out and dominate is, in my opinion, like good old baseball, that these guys still like know how to get outs as good as anybody in the world. So yeah, DeGrom has been awesome to watch. I'm glad I kind of went away from my initial thing, because you and I debated in like January when Nick Pollock had him super high on the list. And I was like, I can tell you, Steve, I'm not going to touch this one. And I ended up, you know, leaping in there with my home league. So this one has been one of my favorite stories of the season. But yeah, talk to me about if you want to add anything on DeGrom or not with this half he's put up.
We will never know this, but I wonder, like, how conscious he is of his like velocity and what he's trying to do to try and get back to having a full season worth of workload, because he has not had a full season's worth of workload since that 2019 season. You know, he had three straight years of 200 innings and then hadn't topped 100 until just now. His last start, he got to 100 innings. 100 pitches. Which is crazy. Yeah, I know that there was COVID in there, but absolutely insane. You know, how long it's been, and that he's still this good.
And yet it looks different than if you said DeGrom's 100 innings are going to have 170 strikeouts and there's going to be IL stints. You know what I mean?
That's almost kind of what you were buying like the last few years, right? It's like, yeah, whatever. If he gets 100 innings, he still could be the best pitcher. Now it's like, okay, like maybe he can do this for a full season. It's interesting because the velocity, if you look at it month by month, it's gone from 96.8 in April up to 97.8 in July. I know that's just one July start, but still it was 97.5. in June. So it's slowly ticking up, and I wonder if it's just like that's part of the plan of him slowly increasing the velocity as he gets more into the season and his arm is more in you know, it, further away from the rehab of Tommy John and has some more stamina on it. In a weird way, after having those innings, right? Like, you're used to it in a sense, even though the workload does make you tired, right? But like every pitch, like the changeup slowly ticked up. It's at 84. It started at 89. It's now closer to 90. Slider, same thing. In July, and the July start, it was 90.6. So who knows, maybe there will be some, like, that's the one nitpick. It's like, you know, where's the 14 strikeout Jacob DeGrom game?
Right,
they've all been like 6 or 7. Maybe those will come too. Maybe we could have our cake and eat it too, as far as the volume and then the pure dominance from DeGrom.
And it's also a healthy reminder that they're playing baseball and not fantasy baseball, and that the Rangers are 2 games out of the wild card race.
Yeah.
So like, if your theory is right, Steve, you know, DeGrom's probably thinking more about, you know, September, October, big picture. So yeah, I think it's a good point. It'll be interesting to see if he keeps stepping that velocity up. It's kind of similar to Strider a little bit, right? That like he came out and it was like, wait, is this a different pitcher? And the velo's down, and then slowly it's kind of scooted up. So that's been an awesome story, and hopefully, again, knock on wood, it all goes smoothly. Another one where knocking on wood for health is Byron Buxton, who is kind of turning back the clock, Steve. It's been, you know, a roller coaster for Buxton, and he is one who has got to be like on the Mount Rushmore of frustrating fantasy guys to roster, because it's like, you know, I think of like Royce Lewis, Byron Buxton, where it's like, you're so excited, you love the tools, it looks like it's all clicking, and then there's an injury, or then it's a huge like valley in performance. But Buxton here at the midway point is on pace for a career year, and it's coming at age 31, and he's had a pretty good career to show for. A 277 average, 900 OPS, 19 homers, 15 steals. I thought it was surprising that Buxton has never hit 30 home runs or stolen 30 bases in a season, because I feel like he is a guy who you almost view in his prime as like a 40-40 type of threat, you know?
The volume's just never been there. Yeah. He's played 100 games once since 2017. He's played 100 games twice in his career. His career is 10 years old.
Is there like, anybody, this is like, there any hitter that's more like exciting but injury prone than Buxton?
This is like DeGrom if he never had those 200 inning seasons. Because every time that he's on the field, basically except for 2023, and he, even 2023, I know the average was low, but basically every time he's on the field, he paces for like 40-30.
Yeah.
Every single year. And there's some really good years in there. He was 70% better than league average in his age 27 season, 2021. Oh, he only played 61 games. He was 35% better than league average in 2022. Oh, he only played 92 games. Last year, 41% better. Oh, he only played 102. This year, it's on 47% better. He's healthy. He's pacing for 40-30. Like another guy that would just be, look, this is what happens in a healthy Byron Buxton season. So, really cool to see a guy that I've always been a fan of and always have had a bunch of shares. And maybe this year, honestly, I might have the least, unfortunately. Maybe this is the year that he finally does put it together and stay healthy in his age 31 season. Who would have thought that? But another guy that you know, I look on fondly and find as to be a great story of the first half, with how awesome Buxton has been.
Agree.
Good for him.
Totally agree. And I feel like, granted, he's 31. Like, I'm not trying to, you know, eulogize a guy who's 31 and on pace for 40-30, but there is a little nostalgia. Maybe it's because he's in this section, but Buxton feels like one that 10 years down the road, if we're playing the immaculate grid game, like he's just a classic name, man. Like the double B, he's so exciting, but he's like, I think he's frustrated every manager. For me, that 2017 year is when I took down my home league for the first time and I had him on the roster, so he's immortalized on my little like cutout framed photo in my room. So I'm always a fan of Buxton, and I'm with you. It's kind of the Joe Adele thing, that it's like pending health for Buxton. It would be awesome to kind of give him his flowers for a full season, like career year, high watermarks on homer steals, all that stuff. Cause he might not be too far away from needing to evolve into, like, you know, you're not getting 35 steals when you're like at age 35 typically.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's, you know, he's on the wrong side of 30, but this is, he's still very, very capable of going off for a career year. I guess it begs the question, Steve, if he stays healthy, where do you put a Buxton in, like, what round of the draft next year?
He would still be discounted just because of the injury history. I think he would, like even
fourth,
if he goes
4 or 5, something
yeah. Like four. Even if he does produce first round value, there's probably a 3 or 4 round discount, just based on the game track record.
Yep. Well, we were talking about when Buxton hits 35, George Springer is age 35, and he is on pace for his best fantasy season since 2019. And this is one that we talked about 5 weeks ago, Steve.
We loved him last year, right?
Yeah, and we did last year as well. Yeah, and I actually had a lot of Springer this year. I can't take the victory lap that I saw this coming, but I liked him as my kind of Raz Slam or best ball like volume guy.
Yeah, I loved him as that last year. Yeah,
yeah, he just is a good kind of filler for outfield. You know, you're going to get some volume, but this year he's taken a much different approach. And this was what I was talking about with Riley Green a little bit, that he's on the record talking early in the season, like I think it was April, about how he was going to his A swing more often, meaning he's going to trade off some swings and misses, but stop trying to do some slap hits and just try to crush the ball. And what we've seen is his bat speed skyrocket. Mm-hmm. And that was what made us talk about him in that end of May, early June episode, where he was pretty available in kind of shallower 12-team leagues. And yeah, now we're looking at his midseason line at 271 average, 852 OPS, 13 homers, 9 steals, and about 50 runs in RBI. So he's not maybe the superstar that some of the other names that we've talked about are doing this year. But if Springer puts in a 25-15 year, that's like an OF2. So yeah, Springer, it begs the question again of like, do we think this is legit? Because I know some people got impatient and dropped him, and he hasn't been completely absent from being like a waiver option this year. So do you buy this as real, and what do we make of it?
I mean, if you just look at just the line this year and forget what happened over the last few years and how old Springer is and the steady decline basically since he signed with the Blue Jays, yeah, there's not much to not like, right? Like a 44% hard hit percentage, a 15% barrel rate, a K rate under 20, a walk rate close to 13. There's not much chase at all. It's like the best chase rate since 2019 when he had 39 homers and hit 292 and was like an MVP candidate. Mm-hmm. Again, I know caveat of rabbit ball that year, but there's always been a lot to like with Springer, like rate essentially basically since he like cut the K rate down in the after the first few years in the season, after his like rookie year and first few years, he was a low swing and miss, good power, good contact, like, 260, 30 homers. And then, he was able to chip in steals, back in the day. And he's actually become more of a runner in recent years, right? Like it's been 14, 20, even the 16 last year, yeah. Just one caught steal. I know the steal rule have changed, and he's clearly a very good base runner to take advantage of that. He's been caught 0 times in 9 attempts this year. So, I don't see what's to say, hey, yeah, this is just a flash in the pan. George Springer's just hot. Like, no, this is like some of the best underlying metrics of his career. Best hard hit rate of his career. That's crazy. Second best barrel rate. He's doing something right.
Like the max EV is nowhere close to the best of his career. So that kind of supports the narrative, though, that he's just putting his A swing out there on a regular basis.
And yeah, he's 35 now. So, right, his best A swing now isn't going to be what it was when he was 27 and had a 116 max EV, right? Yeah. Okay. It's 112. Mm-hmm. But he's sort of pairing the best swing decisions and best hard hit rate in a while, the swing decisions that come with being an age 35 veteran in his 11th season, with some, who knows, maybe there was some bat speed training, right? I wonder what did you say what his bat speed was compared to last year, right?
I believe it's the high, far and away the highest. That's what he talked about.
Yeah.
So last year.
So it's 73 this year. Last year it was 71. It was 52 percentile last year. And it's up to 68th percentile. So a good jump, especially considering that, he's 35 years old. So yeah, I'm in on George Springer. This is awesome. I was hoping for this, like, or at least 80% of this over the last few years, just because there was so much to like about George Springer's game. Even last year, right? I mean, it was 19 homers, 16 steals. That didn't kill you. It was a pretty bad triple slash with the 674 OPS, but
yeah, you kind of just viewed him as cheap. He can help in a variety of categories. He's not a zero on power or speed, but yeah, this has been more than anybody signed up for. And he's going to make for an interesting, like, it's going to feel very vanilla in draft rooms if he keeps this up, just because, like, oh man, do I want to grab George Springer at 120 or whatever it is. But like, if all this stuff holds through the second year, I think you kind of have to say, this is a different guy than the past 3 years, with an approach change to match and the numbers to back it up. So, yeah, I think Springer is another cool one. And I feel like Springer, Buxton, and DeGrom, you got to be happy for these guys that are kind of bouncing back and doing it on the other side of 30. So, yeah, great list. Anything else storyline wise or anything that you wanted to hit on?
One name for the out of nowhere list, Andy Páez, I think is worth mentioning.
Yeah.
Got him. Homered again tonight. Just another like win for Dodger player development and just the organization that they run as far as like, you know, throwing like, you know, Dodgers, you think of it and, oh yeah, they just sign everyone and throw all this money at everybody. But yeah, they also develop guys like Andy Páez and get the most out of Tommy Edman. But Páez looks like a really, really good, impressive young player that does a lot of things that we on this show like, as far as a strikeout rate below 20%. You know, the barrel rate may not be there, the hard hit rate may not be there, but it's translating into 16 home runs, and you know, he's just 24 years old, so I wouldn't be surprised if there's some improvements in some of those quality contact metrics over the next few years. So just another guy that the Dodgers have that they've done a great job with and looks like a really, really exciting young player that plays really good defense in center field.
Exactly. And I was just about to say, he's like a baseball player, man. It's like when they do with like Chris Taylor or something where you're like, oh, this guy can run, he can throw, like he's a good contact hitter. He's getting the most of his power. Like he is a cool one. You know, it's less cool that it's the Dodgers because you're just like, oh, another Dodger, but I do have him in my home league, so that's been fun. You got any shares of Páez, Steve?
I did last year, like I when he was first came up and had a pretty hot start. I grabbed him a bunch, but I did not have much of him this year. I don't know why. It just was a blind spot, and he was like an ad, and like he wasn't big really time. Drafted.
There was uncertainty on like playing time and stuff, like early on with Conforto and Edmund, and then, all that stuff. But he's cemented his.
Easy to get lost in a lineup like that, right? And I think that was a case of Andy Páez being overlooked a little bit.
And we could, there's ones nonstop. I mean, I tried to leave out Shane Baz because we've been talking about him nonstop, but like there's so many great stories so far. That's just the ones that jumped out to us. So if you guys want to hear us hit on any other players, we'll be doing another kind of all-star break edition with some fantasy all-stars, so feel free to hit us up on any of the socials. That's episode 184. A lot of fun, Steve, as always. It's great on America's birthday talking about America's pastime. So thanks, man, and thanks for talking baseball with us, guys.
Thanks for listening. Later.